Lewis Mumford had this to say about Kropotkin's Field Factories and Workshops, and some of the insights of that book, Field Factories and Workshops, we're going to be exploring in future shows. What I'm about to quote is from Colin Ward's introduction to Kropotkin's book, and this is Lewis Mumford. Quote, almost half a century in advance of contemporary economic and technical opinion, which means now, you know, a century in advance now, he had grasped the fact that the flexibility and adaptability of electric communication and electric power, along with the possibilities of intensive biodynamic farming, had laid the foundations for a more decentralized urban development in small units, responsive to direct human contact and enjoying both urban and rural advantages. I mean, my comment on this, don't we hunger for the trees, for the green, which seems each year to be reduced more and more in my low income, well, my gentrifying community, they keep hacking away and hacking away. I think it's important for them for there to be a clear distinction between them and us. And so they are very into gradations of good stuff, making sure that we get it, that they are the supreme rulers and we are the subjects. Well, that's enough of that. Enough. We're tired of co-signing their crazy illusions. Let's get the earth and our lives back on a solid, sane footing. It's way time. Continuing with Lewis Mumford, Kropotkin realized that the new means of rapid transit and communication, coupled with the transmission of electric power in a network rather than in a one-dimensional line, made the small community on a par in essential technical facilities with the overcongested city. By the same token, rural occupations, once isolated and below the economic and cultural level of the city, could have the advantage of scientific intelligence, group organization, and animated activities, originally a big city monopoly. And with this, the hard and fast division between urban and rural, between an industrial worker and farm worker, would break down too. Kropotkin understood these implications before the invention of the motor car, the radio, the phone, though each of these inventions further confirmed his penetrating diagnosis by equalizing advantages between the central metropolis and the once peripheral and utterly dependent small communities. With the small unit as a base, he saw the opportunity for a more responsible and responsive local life, with greater scope for the human agents who were neglected and frustrated by mass organizations. And that's unquote from Lewis Mumford, The City in History. Kropotkin saw, and not he alone, Nikola Tesla being his most notable peer, he saw even further, because of his work in unifying us through the transmissions of wireless energy. Nikola Tesla being his most notable peer, contemporary compadre in this, that the accumulation, concentration of resources, and in earth terms, when you say those words, that means that literally the separation of us from our earth and each other, that's what it means. That's what happens. That's how that is accomplished. And they like to kind of snow us, they like to wow us with the abstract terms. The reality ain't impressive. It's been disastrous. They saw that the accumulation concentration of resources, us being separated from our earth, makes no sense by any rational criterion, is in fact highly irrational, and only persists because those who have done the disappropriation, because this was once ours communally, who have done this hoarding and have conned us into accepting it, and Alice Miller is showing us how this acceptance became systematic. along with the key division of class, the notion that brain must be removed from hand, have organized and planned. This is the only way this happened, with extreme levels of organization. And again, Alice is showing us how that happened, how that got reproduced over the generations, intergenerationally. Organized and planned both up front, at first, as with Bentham and with these poisonous pedagogues we're going to be reading in a minute, and behind scenes, to keep this nonsensical, irrational, costly sick system afloat on a sea of misery. The most basic, practical, political result of this being, we the people, in being kept divided, are kept impotent, trapped in tenuous, insecure subsistence, precariously perched on an unstable, because irrational and opposed to our nature as human beings, base. And on that fundamentally unstable base, all the insane superstructure teeters, needing but our touch of good fellowship, of good plain commoner sense, once we're discussing it, to be reshaped into what we need. In some respects, it's quite amazing that they've gotten us to accept what we don't want, that such a powerful force as the earth in us could have been kept for so long in harness. We must, to preserve our free future, warily approach any division between mind and hand, as that gradually detrenching but still within us class training leaps to serve an outer, to avoid the fear of an empty inner. It is our power-designed misunderstanding and miseducation about what this constructed world of class is, how it got made, how it's reproduced, that has been the chief means of keeping us from seeing how to get free. What I'm realizing, what I sort of knew, is that we can't be fully alive unless we know what's truly going on in the world we're born into, in terms of its motive forces, the real factors shaping it. So to authentically engage with it, when we don't, can't, or when we're prevented, we on some level start to lose interest in the whole misanthropic operation, the mindless competition. We feel the breath of sadistic puppet masters on our necks. And that to the degree we accept the lies of Plato's tribesmen, to the degree that we have not achieved any independence of thought, we mistake their will for our own. When Plato's uncle Critias waxed poetic about the cleverness, so-called, of one of his unknown predecessor ruler statesmen in inventing the gods with which to con the people, he's helping us to see the primary function of class-based mythologies to keep us from wanting to know. From the cautionary tale of the sirens to Adam and Eve, power wants to keep its secrets as they enable them to seem omnipotent.